So on our Friday movie day, we thought we'd dig a little deeper into the releases of the weekend. And A.O. Scott, film critic for the New York Times, joins us. He's also co-host of At the Movies. And you've been the critic for the New York Times, one of the movie critics of the New York Times, for 10 years now, right?
Yeah, almost exactly. I started in January of 2000, so it's been a decade.
and we're getting to the end of this decade. Yeah. What kind of a decade has it been in terms of movie making? You have a very interesting piece that I read last night just about this interesting relationship that a critic has to have with films and directors and with audiences.
Yeah, well, I was thinking back, you know, on sort of 10 years of professional movie watching and then a previous lifetime of amateur or civilian movie watching. And it struck me, I mean, I was thinking about, you know, end of the decades, you know, you make lists, and my co-host Michael Phillips and I are counting down our 10 favorites, you know, in a traditional top 10 way on the show At the Movies. But I was thinking, you know, I think critics and the public and audience members think about movies a little bit differently. I mean, for a critic, the sort of the fallback, you know, sort of list of masterpieces has to do with great directors and great work. So I was thinking about Clint Eastwood, Pedro Almodovar, Steven Spielberg, all of whom have done great work.
Well, you make an interesting point about them, that they did their big, huge movies back in the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, and it gave them the ability to make much more sensitive, and you say better movies. Here's Eastwood's effort in Mystic River, Mystic River, which won the Academy Award and which you liked.
Say you were in prison?
Jesus.
Here we go. Bloody. I'm just asking.
16 years ago, I did a 2-year bid for robbery at Deer Island. Is that going to help you find my daughter's killer? I mean, I'm just asking. Let's forget about that. Let's get back.
Eastwood at the top of his game.
Yeah, and that's Sean Penn in one of the great film performances, I think, ever. And Eastwood, you know, turned 70 in 2000. And,
he's still going strong.
He's still going strong. And he's had, you know, Million Dollar Baby, Mystic River, the two movies about Iwo Jima, just an incredible run.
And the Detroit movie, the Gran Torino.
Yes, Gran Torino.
Here's more of an indication of how audiences, though, track a decade of movies. Here's Steve Carell in The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Wow. So many stories are running through my head right now. I dated this girl for a while, and she was really a nasty freak. She just loved to get down with sex all the time.
Is it frustrating for you when a performance like that just breaks through and everybody goes around being Steve Carell?
A little bit. I mean, I think that's a terrific movie, and that's kind of an important movie. I have a little sort of list in the Times Magazine piece this Sunday of movies that I think are the most influential. And that one, certainly being the first film directed by Judd Apatow, kind of helped to launch this wave.
The Apatow era.
Yes, the Apatow era. We'll always remember, you know, the at least the second half of the decade by Seth Rogen's face everywhere you look.
Or we might just forget it.
You know, but with this divide, and you talk in your piece for the New York Times Magazine, and that's coming out this weekend, you talk about the difference between the way the critics talk about auteurs and the director's vision of movies, and the way we view them, which is Harry Potter flying by on his broom, and Lord of the Rings and Frodo venturing out towards Mount Doom, and those are the things that are really memorable to us. But does it harm our appreciation? I mean, as an amateur myself, does it harm my appreciation of movies? Exactly.
No, I don't think so. I mean, and I think often you know, movies. The best movies and the ones that really last represent a kind of a convergence of what critics are looking at and what audiences are seeing. So that there are movies that are great works by great directors that are also very popular and just sort of feed the collective imagination in the way that you're talking about.
Eastwood straddles this. I mean, in the 1970s, you know, the Dirty Harry movies it changed the language. I mean, you have Go Ahead, Make My Day, and then you have Do You Feel Lucky, Punk, from Magnum Force. But here, this decade, it seems to me, has referenced a lot of that stuff. Here's the Coen brothers in No Country for Old Men in a scene that I want your reaction to, which seems to directly reference the Magnum Force punk, Do You Feel Lucky? This is from No Country for Old Men.
You know what date is on this coin?
No.
1958. It's been traveling 22 years to get here. And now it's here. And it's either heads or tails. And you have to say, call it.
Look, I need to know what I stand to win.
Everything.
How's that?
Just tend to win everything, call it.
All right. Heads, then.
Well done.
Chilling scene. Do you feel lucky, punk?
Yeah, it comes, I think, like most of the dialogue in that movie, directly out of Cormac McCarthy's book. But yeah, well, I think that scene also gets to one of the themes that was definitely dominant both in kind of serious, ambitious filmmaking and in more popular filmmaking in the 80s, which is good and evil, and this just sort of endless struggle determined by kind of cycles of revenge.
I mean, in an American landscape, too. You've got There Will Be Blood, which is an American story, but also this classic good and evil story. Yeah. You've got 310 to Yuma, same sort of good and evil story.
And you even, you know, you have it certainly in Harry Potter and in Lord of the Rings. And
seven books sustained on vengeance.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's a fabulous piece in the Sunday New York Times. A.O. Scott wrote it, but now it's time for trivia, okay? All that high-minded stuff, we're done, dude. Strap yourself in. In honor of the release of 2012 this weekend, our takeaway trivia question is all about surviving the end of the world. Name the character or star who survives the end of the world in the following three movies. Deep Impact.
I'm just totally blanking.
Elijah Woods.
Okay.
Good luck to us all.
Okay. How about Day After Tomorrow?
Now, this is one I saw and reviewed within the last 10 years, and I'm ashamed to say I don't remember.
Jake Gyllenhaal and Dennis Quaid.
I'm losing all my credibility here.
You've got to be able to do the last one,
all right.
The original Planet of the Apes. Who survives?
Get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape.
And that's
Charlton Heston.
Charlton Heston, nice.
I really did it. You maniac!
That's the worst Charlton Heston impression I think I've ever heard.
It's early in the morning.
A supreme moment of overacting in the history of American cinema.
You maniacs!
And Tim from Woodbridge, one of our listeners, got that answer just before you did. A.O. Scott, thanks
good
so much
Tim.
For being with us.
Thank you.
It's Movie Friday.
Next week, we're going to be all super freakonomics. Stephen Dubner is going to be here to talk about all sorts of unusual ways that economics affects our lives and anything else super freaky. And we're going to be asking you for your super freakonomics stories. As always, you can respond to anything you hear here by calling 877-8-MY-TAKE or going to mytakeatthetakeaway.org.
I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
Well done.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.